The end of Parshas Bo, the end of Perakut Beis, Klal Yisrael leave Mitzrayim. Chumash tells us the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Sukkot, about 600,000 men on foot aside from children. The Erev Rav, they baked the dough, they took out of Egypt unto unleavened cakes. And then the Chumash tells us the following. The habitation of the children of Israel during which they dwelled in Egypt was 430 years. It was at the end of 430 years, and it was on that very day that all the legions of Hashem left the land of Egypt. It's a night of anticipation, a little shimurim for Hashem to take them out of the land of Egypt. So, when we take a look at this, we're struck immediately with the number of how many years Klal Yisrael was in Egypt. Chumash tells us they were in Egypt for 430 years. Well, if we look back, and this is source 1b, to the Bris Bamsarim, when Avraham Avinu was told about his children was going to be in a land not theirs, and they're going to be oppressed, and they're going to have to be vavdum, they'll be in servitude, there it says they'll be there for 400 years. So, which one is it? Is it 400 years or 430 years? Where did these 30 years come from? Further, it says that this is that they were dwelled in Egypt for 430 years. Well, they didn't dwell in Egypt for 430 years. And this is source number two. Although the verse gives the duration of Israel's stay in Egypt as 430 years, it's clear that the nation could not have been in Egypt that long for the lifetimes of Kehat, who came with Yaakov, and his son Amram took only 270 years. And Amram's son Moshe was 80 at the time of the Exodus. Rather, the rabbinic tradition, as cited by Rashi, is as follows. The covenant between the pieces took place 430 years before the Exodus, and that is a period referred to in our verse. At that time, Hashem foretold to Avram that his offspring would endure 400 years, during which would be the exile, persecution, and servitude, but not necessarily all of them at the same time. So, obviously, there are a lot of Mefarshim in this very long Ramban, and the Ibn Ezra, and the Beis Halevi. There's a lot of Torah on everything we're speaking about today. Well, it's not going to be our focus, so to speak. When it says that there are 430 years, it doesn't mean that they were in Egypt for 430 years. It means that they were in Egypt, as we know. In source number 5, they were actually there for 210 years. So what happened to the other 190 years? 190 years is the time that the Avos were in Eretz Yisrael. So the 430 years, and this is a very famous Rashi, is from the time of Leidas Yitzchak, from the time that Yitzchak Avinu was born. That's when the clock of the 400 years start. Ki ger yezarecha, your children will be foreigners. Well, when does that start? When you have children. So when we talk about the 400 years starting, it's starting from the time that Yitzchak Avinu was born. Our pasuk says 430 years. So 430 years is that 30 years previous was a Brit Samsarin, which the Mefarshim have a problem with because that would make Avraham Avinu 70 years old, and he left for Eretz Yisrael at 75. So he went to Eretz Yisrael, he came back to Haran, and then went back again. So again, the Mefarshim, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, they have a field day with that. This is not where we're going to go today. What we are going to go today is to try to understand, well, what does it mean that they were in Egypt for 400 years if they weren't in Egypt for 400 years? And indeed, when the Targum Shivan, when they translated the Targum into Greek, this is one of the emendations they made. They wrote they dwelt in Egypt and other lands, because they didn't dwell in Egypt for 400 years. So, what does it mean that they were there for 400 years? And where does this other 30 years come from, aside from this Pshat of Rashi, that it's from the Bris Bamsarim? Is there any other way of understanding the problem between 440 and 430? The other issue that we're going to be dealing with today, aside from understanding how long were they really in Egypt, is a very interesting Gemara. And this is brought at the bottom of two. A sizable number of the tribe of Ephraim, convinced that the 400 years began from the covenant, attempted a mass escape 30 years before the Exodus, and most of them were slaughtered. So if we say that it's the 400th years of beginning from the time of Leidas Yitzchak, these people from Ephraim thought that, you know, when the 400 years clock starts, it starts from the first Purim Psarim. And then when 400 years came and they weren't redeemed, they said, you know what, time has come. And they went out themselves and they were killed. Why Dafka B'nai Ephraim? What are we to learn from this? What's the message from this? And these were the B'nai Ephraim that Yechezkel HaNavi resurrects. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says at that famous Hatzamos Yefeshos, the famous chapter 37, when Yechezkel HaNavi resurrects the dead. So let's try to take a look at this on three levels. What was the reason B'nai Ephraim left? Where do we get the extra 30 years? Were they in Egypt 400 years? What does it mean that they left after 430 years? To try to get some understanding of what's going on here. And again, a little bit, it's going to be a bit esoteric, I grant you, but a little bit what we can gain for our lives. Fascinating ideas, my friends, today. So Rabbi Bernstein, Emmanuel Bernstein, in Darkness to Destiny, brings down a number of these ideas of the clock of exile. Brings down Rashi, which we mentioned in Source 5.2. The Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer states that the mandate to enslave the Jewish people long extended to the daytime. The Egyptians, however, forced the Jews to work at night as well, which means they should have been in Egypt 400 years. However, the workload was so great that the 400 years shrunk to 210 years. So when it says that they dwelled in Egypt 400 years, it means that they were supposed to be in Egypt that amount of time, but time took on a different dimension because the Egyptians worked them so hard. Some commentator explained that the verse says that the Egyptian embittered Jewish lives. It means that they overworked them in a way that compacted 400 years worth of oppression into 210 years. Other people say in 4 that since the Jewish people reproduced at an unnaturally high rate, they were considered to be representing multiple generations of Jewish servitude at the same time. All of these explanations have a common theme. Namely, the 400 years of the decree were calculated in a way that resulted in the Jewish people being considered to have served the term of 400 years without physically having stayed there for the duration of time. And that's really what the Rambam, going back to source number 2 in the very famous Igeres Teiman, he says that Klal Yisrael didn't know how was it going to be. There was going to be a period of Avdus, a period of Geirus, a period of Inui, of being foreigners, of being slaves, of being afflicted, but no one knew exactly how it was going to play itself out. And that's why when we talk about, well, how many years were they there, and shouldn't have they been there a longer period of time, the answer really is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who was chishev et haketz, as we say in the Haggadah. He was the one who worked out all these years so that it should be the exact way it was meant to be. Let's try to understand this a little bit deeper. What's really going on here, and on the first level, the main message for our lives, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has an accounting that we don't know about. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrates things in ways that are beyond us to even fathom or understand, and we are so limited from our vantage point. And with this in mind, the Ner Uziel, Rav Uziel Malevsky, brings down Rashi in Source 6, that no more than 400 years could have elapsed from the time of Yitzchak's birth until the Exodus. Rashi concludes that the Torah is taking into account here the 30-year period that elapsed from the Brit Ben Psarim until Yitzchak's birth. Although this accounts for the extra 30 years, Rashi does not explain why the Torah would include this apparently unrelated period of time in the total number of years that Jewish people stayed in Egypt. Like, okay, so you figured out where the 30 years came from. It came from the Brisbane of Surin. The 400 years started when Yitzhak Avinu was born, but the decree was given 30 years before that. But why is that necessary? So he brings here in 7 a Nitziv. The Nitziv of Elushin explains that since God created the world primarily for the sake of the Jewish people, it follows that the major events of history are orchestrated to set the stage for specific events that will bear significance for the Jews. This concept has been expressed at least in some measure by a growing number of modern historians who have attributed establishing the state of Israel to the Holocaust. In attempting to explain why the United Nations, a traditionally anti-Semitic body, which has shown its true colors in recent year, ratified the 1947 resolution calling for establishing a Jewish state, these historians conclude that the nations of the world were consumed with guilt for having turned a blind eye to what the Germans did against the Jews in the Holocaust. Their support for the UN resolutions was an attempt to expiate their act of insensitivity and soothe their troubled consciousness. Following the same logical strain, Columbus' discovery of America can be viewed as a divine plan, enacted 500 years in advance to prepare a safe haven for Jewish people in the 12th century, and ultimately during the Holocaust as well, for those who were able to go at that time. The Nassif explains that Egypt became a regional superpower exactly 430 years before the Jewish people's exodus from that land. Egypt's rise to world supremacy coincided exactly with the Brisbane Psarim. At that moment, when Avram learned that his descendants would be enslaved by a strange nation, Hashem began to set the stage for this episode in Jewish history by elevating the underdeveloped nation of Egypt to the level of regional superpower. This is necessary for a divine plan, for only a major superpower could be capable of sustaining such a large Jewish population. At that point, God sent a group of angels, and this is Hashem's Sfaot, God's armies, to strengthen Egypt's economies. And these angels abandoned Egypt the exact moment Jewish people departed. And that's why it says, at the end of 430 years, all of God's armies left Egypt and brought daylight. It's brought down the Mount Lois as well, nine. Why is it repeat that they left after 430 years? The Torah already told us that. It's not only the Jews leaving, the Tzivos Hashem, we spoke about this many years ago. Who are the Tzivos Hashem? The Tzivos Hashem were the angels that Hashem had set up 430 years prior. So what's really going on here, my friends, is very deep. We know, and this is found in Yonah as well, but Sivstavi brings in the first pasuk in Source 10. Why did Hashem want Nineveh, the capital of Usher, to do tshuva? Because anyone who's going to destroy the Jews has to be a superpower. And Hashem wanted them to be to do tshuva, to be around, to destroy the Jews. Right? To be a Ritsua Mardus, the stick to hit Klal Yisrael. Hashem always has the Jews in the superpower countries. And really, we see that once the Jews leave, their greatness usually falls very quickly afterwards. So here, my friends, we can appreciate what is the 430 years, why is that significant? The Chumash is telling us not about a count of Bris Ben Absarim and when Yitzhak is born and all that. It's telling us something much, much deeper. That when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu at the Bris Ben Absarim, you're going to be in a land that is going to be a foreign land that's going to overpower you, at that moment, Hashem set up the angels in place, the spiritual forces in place, that Egypt should begin to become a superpower. And that was necessary so that when the Jews would ultimately go down there, they would be that superpower, and that when the Jews left, the koach, the power of Egypt, also diminished at the same time. So the country reverted to a state of financial and technological darkness. This is what we need to understand. There is nothing happening by accident. The 430 years are showing us Hashem is preparing, in this case, as a punishment, but as we see by Columbus, as a safe haven. Hashem prepares everything in advance so that when it's needed, it's in place. And that is what the 430 years is hinting at. And this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that's orchestrating everything is what the Birkas Mordechai in his Haggadah also echoes. He says that the Koshi HaShibud Hishlim HaMinyan, you know, Klai Shal could have been there for 400 years, but Hashem said no. They don't need to be there 400 years. They need to be able to achieve what 400 years of hard labor will achieve, which is the Kor HaBarzel, which is the fiery furnace, to get them to be on a level of sensitivity, a level of understanding, and we know throughout Chumash, whenever it talks about be nice to the ger, yosam and amana, the stranger, the orphan, the widow, it says, v'zacharta, remember you were a slave in Egypt. There was that consciousness that had to be embedded in the Jewish people, that moral compass that was necessary. Hashem understood that it could happen over 400 years, but they wouldn't be able to withstand the 400 years. The chesed of Hashem was that he made the work harder so that they could come out earlier. And he quotes a beautiful pasuk that says, Ki ma ha'adam shiavo acharei ha'melech. Who is man that can come after the king? In simple English, the pasuk says, and this is really lesson number one for today, who is man with our limited understanding that can be able to appreciate and fathom the depth and the magnitude of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and the thought, kivyachol, of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan? And that's why, continuing on the next page, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Paro and things get worse and not better, Moshe Rabbeinu is like, hello, what's going on here? And again, this is the idea. Moshe Rabbeinu, if Hashem's telling you to go, it's not up for you to understand and appreciate why things are getting worse and not better. It's for you to have that humility to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. And indeed, the Sfarim tell us this, that why did things get worse? They weren't given straw, and things just became much worse when Moshe Rabbeinu came, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that redemption has to happen right now. The time has come. The tefillos have hit Shemayim. The tefillos are there. They need to be redeemed, but they're not yet worthy. They need a little bit more, for whatever reasons we don't understand, of this difficulty in order to be redeemed. So when things were getting worse, while in Moshe Rabbeinu's eyes and in Klal Yisrael's eyes, they're like, Hashem, how much more can we go through? What is going on here? You make a promise and then that we're going to be redeemed, and then things just get so much more intensified worse. Hashem, it's not fair. And we have to understand, Ki ma ha'adam shiavo acharei ha'melech, who are we to understand the ways of Hashem? And that's why it's Dafka, when things became worse, that Hashem says, you finished the quota. There's a certain amount of pain and challenge you needed to have, and now it's over. So now when Klal Yisrael look back at what happened, they're like, Ach kmochem, ein milim l'te'er tfisat ha'rosh b'yadayim, in the bracket in 23. Lemor, ilu ha'inu yodim b'shat ha'ra'ah shel matzavenu. If we'd only know when things got in worse, the makings of heaven that are so beautiful, that are orchestrated so precisely, then we would have been at ease and have less doubts and less wonders. We didn't know. And this is a message really for us, my friends. You know, oftentimes we go through something and we think like we can't go on anymore. And then it gets worse. And we're thinking, oh my gosh, it can't get any worse. Know that the getting worse is a sign that now it's going to be over. The getting worse is like whatever, you know, had to be taken care of, it's finished. Instead of dragging out for another, you know, prolonged period, it's going to be over. That's it. And whatever had to be, had to be. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu who knows how to orchestrate. So when it says that the Jewish people were in the desert Mitzrayim for 400 years, it means that Klal Yisrael were in Egypt for 210 years, but it felt like 400 years. They experienced the servitude as if they were there for 400 years, and that is all part of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's orchestration, and that's the humility that we need to understand. That just like Hashem has set up the angel to, you know, make Egypt a world power 430 years earlier, And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting and Chishev et HaKeitz, waiting, knowing exactly how much we have to suffer. That's true in our own personal lives. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is setting up all the refuah before the Makkah. He's setting up all the necessary pieces so that everything fits together at the exact time, at the exact precision that it needs to happen. Now, on this first level, we can appreciate the B'nai Ephraim. So again, to remind ourselves, Source 15, our blessed sages teach us that the members of Shevet Ephraim left Mitzrayim 30 years prior to designated time of departure. Erroneously, they figured that the Gullus began the time of the Bris Ben Ptorim. Based on their calculation, the 400 years decree of Gullus was completed 30 years earlier. And we know, the Gemara tells us, who were the dead that Yechezkel resurrected. Rav said these were the members of Ephraim who calculated the end, but erred. So who are these B'nai Ephraim? What is this all about? So there is a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, Perek Aleph, Divrei Aleph, Perek Gimel, where it says the following. U'B'nai Ephraim, Shutlach uvarad bino v'tachet bino, and then continues, v'hargum anshe gad hanoldim ba'aretz ki yardu lakachet emiknehem. So it talks about from the children of Ephraim, there was a number of children of Ephraim, and one of these children of Ephraim were killed, by the anshe gad, by the people of Gad, because they went down to take their cattle, and it's a whole story there that's found in the Sfarim, that they went down, they went out, and they wanted to pay for their food, and they went to get the cattle. It's a whole Maisa that happened there, which is not relevant for us right now, and B'nai Gad killed them, and their bones were strewn on the way, and these were the bones that Yechezkel revived. So why did they leave? So Rav Schwab says the following. He says, it's interesting, and this is in Source 16b, that Madua nikru'u elu she'atzu mukdam b'shem b'nei Ephraim. It wasn't all of B'nai Ephraim. It was one group of Ephraim. So why did it just say, Mimishpachat hashutach li she'atzu b'nei hargu? Why does it preface it, u'b'nei Ephraim? So because it prefaces B'nai Ephraim, there must be something about B'nai Ephraim specifically, the tribe of Ephraim, and not just the specific household that went of import. So he says the following, on level number one. Klomar mipnei shavi amayat toshav mitzri shenolad sham kiben melech. Ephraim was born in Egypt. He was born into a royal house. And they had the royal blood in them, and they felt like they could go out on their own. And these were the ones that were killed. And he suggests, Rav Kamenetsky Tzatzal, that since they grew up in Egypt, they grew up very much under the Egyptian mentality and less affected by Klal Yisrael. Yaakov Avinu is about, you go out when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to go out, and then you go out and you fight and do whatever you have to do. But till then, you don't take the initiative, right? You don't move without Das Torah. You don't move without permission. They growing up in the house of the prince, feeling this feeling of royalty, this feeling of strength, and they were strong. Nijashu min ha'gula, they figure like, you know, redemption isn't happening. They said, you know what? We can do this ourselves. And that royal blood in them is what gave them that impetus that, you know, 400 years has passed. Weiter. Now it's time to go. And again, this is level number one. Ki ma ha'adam she'yavo acharei ha'melech. There's a time and place for everything. And that we can take the initiative in our hands. That's why we have people to ask, That's why we have the humility to know that there's a larger picture here. And even if we feel like, hey, the time has come, we're going to leave, you know? We have this royal blood in us. No, if it's not the right time and place, it's not the right thing to do. Level number one. Was it 400 years? Was it 430 years? So we could say that it was 430 years from birth to suffering very easily. And that is significant. Our question, well, why is that significant? Because that's when Egypt began to develop, right at the time of birth to suffering. While Hashem envisions them going to be in the land of Egypt, He builds up the land of Egypt at that time. And that's what we need to understand, that there's so many things happening at the same time that Kadosh Baruch Hu is orchestrating, and we are so limited in our knowledge. And we look in our little lives and say, well, why is this happening? And what about this? And what about that? We don't see that Kadosh Baruch Hu is setting everything up at the exact precise moment when it needs to happen. And we have to recognize that that humility of listening to Kadosh Baruch Hu and not complaining, well, why is this happening? Why is that happening? And it's so easy to complain. It's so easy to question. It is so easy. The basis of Emunah is we understand that whatever Kadosh Baruch Hu does is good. And we have to recognize, Ki maha adam sheyavo acharei hamelech, who are we to try to second guess what the king is about? And a humility that if I'm going through this, this is exactly where Hashem wants me to be right now. Albeit I can daven that things can change, but right now I accept that this is where it's at, and that's a dialectic we all hold on to. That's level one. Level two, which is perhaps the most fascinating of the three levels, albeit level three is going to be very profound, but I'm jumping the gun, is the Shvilei Pinchas. And let's take a look at a major piece of the Shvilei Pinchas. Very interesting Gemara in Pesachim that the Shlach HaKadosh comments on. The Gemara tells us a person should never treat one son differently than his other, but because Yaakov Avinu spent some more money making Yosef's coat, it had the consequence of going down to Egypt. So the Tosfos asks on this, hold on a second. As a consequence of Yaakov Avinu favoring one son, we're going down to Egypt. We were going down to Egypt many years before from the Bris Ben Bsarim. So what's going on here? Because of that, we're going down to Egypt. It's because of Bris Ben Bsarim we're going down to Egypt. So there are many answers, and level three will respond with another answer. Here the Shlach HaKadosh says the following. In truth, the tally of the 400 years began from the very night of the Bris Ben Bsarim. Due to Avram's extreme distress concerning the decree, it was considered as if the galus began already on that night. When Avram hears about this, that's when the clock ticks. At that moment, he's already feeling this dread, this feeling of uneasiness. Thus it turns out that Israel deserved to depart Mitzrayim at the completion of 400 years from the Bris Ben Bsarim. That's when the clock ticks, which is what the B'nai Ephraim understood, and they were right. However, the jealousy of the Shvatim caused them to sin. Seeing that Yaakov loved Yosef, his youngest son, more than any of the other sons, prompted them to sell him. As a result, Yosef HaTzadik suffered until he was 30 years old, and at that time he was elevated to the position of the Viceroy of Mitzrayim. To atone for those 30 years, 30 years were added to the decree of Golos, and they had to stay in Mitzrayim for 430 years. So when Avraham Avinu was told they're going to be enslaved in a land not theirs for 400 years, that was what the decree was. Then when the Chumash tells us they were there for 430 years, well, which one is it? The answer is they were supposed to be there for 400 years, but they were added 30 years as a result, as a punishment of the 30 years that they caused Yosef HaTzadik so much pain. So measure for measure, 30 years were added to the Golos. Now let's try to explain this a little bit deeper. When the B'nai Ephraim left, this Medrash says, and V'hi b'shalah paro'atam, V'lo nacham elukim derech eretz plishtim, source 19, that when Hashem sent Paro out, when Paro sent Klai Yisrael out, so Hashem didn't want them to go through the ways of Plishtim, because he did not want them to see the bones of the members of Ephraim scattered all about, and that would scare the daylights out of the Jewish people, and they would turn back ASAP. Hashem said, if Israel sees the bones of the sons of Ephraim lying on the road, they'll return to Mitzrayim. What did Kadosh Baruch Hu do? Top of 20b, he took the blood of the sons of Ephraim and dipped his garments in it, so to speak, as it states, why is your clothing red? Hashem replied, I will not be consoled until I avenge the death of the sons of Ephraim. And the Medrash here is playing on Velo Nacham Elohim. Hashem didn't want it, and Lo Nacham, he was not consoled. Right? He did not lead them, Velo Nacham Elohim, or he was not consoled. So, what's going on here? So perhaps we can say, says the Shvila Pinchas, that B'nai Ephraim, because they were not involved in the sale of Yosef, they reasoned, we don't have the extra 30 years. We can leave after 400 years. Why did they reason this way? Because they weren't responsible for the sale of Yosef. How do I know that? They weren't even alive. Right? When we say Kosha Ravim Zelazen, that we're all interresponsible, that's when we're able to help each other out. But if you weren't even alive, then you wouldn't have even been responsible. So in B'nai Ephraim's mind, they're saying, like, we don't need to stay in Golos another 30 years because of what happened to the Mechiras Yosef. It wasn't our problem, so we can leave earlier. Nevertheless, the asterisk in 21, they were wrong. For although they did not participate in the sale of Yosef, they still required atonement. For Yosef himself was partially responsible for the sale into slavery. As the Shlach HaKadosh writes the name of the Mekubalim, Yosef HaTzadik is counted among the 10 martyrs, because, as we've spoken about, he reported the bad deeds to their fathers, which caused the sale. We can also suggest another reason why the members of Ephraim were punished, because when Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to take the children of Israel, he said to them, I want you to use the words that Yosef HaTzadik gave over in the Masorah. What were those words? Pakod Pakadati. Thus we learn that all Yisrael had a tradition regarding the sign that would signify the Geula. Clearly this tradition included the members of Ephraim, who were the offspring of Yosef. They had been taught that the Redeemer would use the word Pakod Pakadati. So they knew better than to depart Mitzrayim before hearing those specific words, which echoes back to the first level. They needed to wait till the green light to be able to go. Furthermore, if they truly believed that the time of the Gula had arrived, how did they leave Mitzrayim without the bones of Yosef, their elder, who made Yisrael swear to take his bones out of Mitzrayim? Therefore, they were punished accordingly. They all died, and their bones scattered along the path. If already they're going to go, then they had a responsibility to take their forefather with them, Yosef. And since they didn't, their bones, measure for measure, are scattered. Additionally, what possessed them to leave Mitzrayim and abandon their brothers behind to endure the harsh servitude in Mitzrayim? By departing alone, they reawakened the sin of Mechiras Yosef. They were impervious to the suffering of their brothers, just as the brothers were impervious to Yosef's suffering. And indeed, there's a Gevaldic piece in 24 in the Hebrew, where the Tanakh of Eliyahu says, Yotzei Mitzrayim mitzvah achad haita biyadam. Those who left Egypt had one mitzvah, and that one mitzvah was greater than 100 mitzvahs. Umaya mitzvah achad haita biyadam. What was that one mitzvah? Shasu kulam aguda achas. They made themselves into one group. Vikartu bris ligmo chesed zayim zeh, and they made a treaty, a pact, to do kindness one with each other. They understood why they were there that extra 30 years, and they said, our job is to mitake, to rectify the sin of Mechiras Yosef, and therefore they enacted a treaty among each other to take care of each other, to be concerned for each other. So how then could B'nai Ephraim simply say, goodbye, good luck, you suffer, you have a good time being slaves, we're walking out. So even though in their mind the 400 years had come to an end, and they were not responsible to stay the extra 30 years because they were not part of Mechiras Yosef, really, they were part of Mechiras Yosef because Yosef himself was responsible. Two, they had a way to Pakadati, they heard the exact words from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Three, even if their time was up in their mind, you don't leave your brethren behind. It's all for one and one for all. So now, let's understand this a little bit deeper, my friends. And this is the sheer, perhaps not practical, even though I think they're very, very important ideas here, as we've seen and will see. The depth of understanding is, and the beauty of learning and the tapestry is just magnificent. Why was it Bnei Ephraim that went? Why wasn't it Binyamin that went? Why wasn't it Menashe that went? So, he says, the answer can be found in that very strange medrash based on the pasuk in Yeshaya. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He took the blood, 26, of Bnei Ephraim and dipped his garments in it, so to speak, as it says. Why is there red on your clothing? Hashem replied, I will not be consoled until I avenge the sons of Ephraim, as it said, and God was not consoled. So, what's going on here? Obviously, it's imagery, yeah? What does it mean that Hashem is immersing his clothes in the blood of Ephraim, and this has to do with the future redemption? So he says, to explain the matter, we must rely on Chazal's teaching that in preparation for the future Geula, and this in itself is very complex, Hashem will initially send Mashiach ben Yosef, hailing from the tribe of Ephraim, prior to Mashiach ben David, hailing from the Shevet Yehuda. This is the Gemara in Sukkah 27, the rabbis taught in the Braisa. Hashem will say to Mashiach ben David, who will be revealed speedily in our times, ask something of me, and I will grant it to you. When he sees that Mashiach ben Yosef is killed, he will say to him, Master of the universe, I ask of you nothing but life. Hashem will say to him, ask for life. Before you even requested it, your father David already prophesied about you. He asked life for you and have already granted to him. What's going on here? So Marsha writes in the Chidushei Agados. Hold on, it all makes sense. Maybe. At the time of the future Geula, swiftly in our times, initially Mashiach ben Yosef will come to save the Jewish people, and he'll be killed by the multitudes of idolaters that will return to Yerushalayim. The complete Geula will not be realized until the arrival of Mashiach ben David, as explained in several texts. And it's very interesting. The Arizal says that when we say in the Tefillah of Etzamach David, V'kisei David avdecha mehera l'socha tachi, and the throne of David your servant, may you, rather in Mishlam Yurcha, and the throne of David your servant, may you establish soon in its midst, in Shemona Esrei, the end of Mishlam Yurcha, we should be praying that Mashiach ben Yosef not be killed in the war of Gog and Magog, and that we are able, that his arrival should not be delayed until the death of Mashiach ben Yosef. Instead, may he arrive speedily by having Hashem forgive us and pardon all of our transgressions. So when we say in the Shemona Esrei, V'chisei David avdecha mehera l'socha tachi, prepare speedily the throne of David, what we're really asking for is let's circumvent this whole Mashiach ben Yosef and let's go straight into Mashiach ben David. Let's try to put the pieces together. There is an idea that when Yosef HaTzadik is in Mitzrayim, source number 28, Yehuda is sent down to Mitzrayim. And the Bnei Yisachar, we've spoken about this in the past, says, what is this idea? It's really foretelling Goshna. He sends him to Goshna, which is Gematria Mashiach. He's foretelling Jewish history. That Mashiach ben Yosef first will have to go down to Egypt, will first have to be the first one on the front lines. And after Mashiach ben Yosef, after Yosef HaTzadik, then can come Yehuda, then can come Malchus Beis Yehuda. So now we can appreciate what's going on here. When Bnei Ephraim, and we know Mashiach ben Yosef will come from Ephraim, when Bnei Ephraim realize that the redemption is about to come, they are willing to be Moser Nefesh, even if it means to die, like Mashiach ben Yosef is going to die. They are going out to set up the path of redemption. They are the ones that are going to set up that the road, you know, Set the stage. That's what I'm trying to say. Set the stage for redemption. So they decide that we're going to leave 30 years earlier. As we explained, we're not part of the Mechira. The redemption has come. They go out. Their going out was in their mind setting the stage for then the redemption to happen and for the Jewish people then to walk into the land of Israel and will live happily ever after. What was their problem? Their problem was, in truth, however, they were mistaken. The end of 29. They should not have left Mitzrayim without explicit permission from Hashem to do so. Their misguided act was not in any way comparable to Yosef's descent to Mitzrayim. He did not go to Mitzrayim of his own free will. He was sold into slavery by his brothers. Similarly, Mashiach ben Yosef will only come to redeem Israel after being instructed to do so from above. And therefore they were died in the process. Notwithstanding, their intentions were l'shem shemayim, and they sacrificed their life for kedusha of Hashem. Therefore Hashem will dip his garments in their blood, so to speak. And furthermore, at the time of the future gula, Mashiach ben Yosef will come initially to redeem Israel and will perish. Hashem will add his blood to the blood of the sons of Ephraim and exact revenge on all those who killed them. So we see from here that really B'nai Ephraim were l'shem shemayim. And the dipping of the blood is that imagery that Hashem is going to avenge their blood. Hashem is not consoled because he realized that what they were doing was in their mind the right thing. What were they missing? And this is what we spoke about in the first level, which segues first level to the second level. It's very nice to have great intentions. At the same time, with all of your great intentions, you need to understand that line from the Kima Ha'adam Shiavo Achar HaMelech. If Hashem didn't tell you to do so, you weren't specifically commanded to do so, that it wasn't your right to do so. Yosef went down because he had no choice. He was sold to go down. Mashiach ben Yosef is going to be said. When we're talking about putting oneself in such difficult situation, in this case, they all died, or most of them died, then it has to be with the permission from above. I want to make mention, and this will bring us now to the third level, that there's a big question of when Mashiach ben Yosef is going to come, when Mashiach ben David is going to come. Do we need a Mashiach ben Yosef? So I want to make mention, this is Rabbi Leff's Shmona Esrei book, which is on Shmona Esrei, but it's really on all of Jewish philosophy. Any topic that's found in the Shmona Esrei, even remotely connected hashkafically, Rabbi Leff will have pages and pages on it. So it's really like a treatise in Jewish philosophy, more than just learning Shmona Esrei. So he says here, alternatively, we can explain this with Rav Sadia Gaon's statement concerning the terrible trials and tribulations that will occur with the Mashiach ben Yosef. He explains that these will be necessary only if Mashiach comes at the deadline and we need to be aroused to do tshuva. In that case, the scenario Mashiach ben Yosef described in the Gemara will be the means to arouse tshuva prior to Mashiach ben David's arrival. However, if we merit Mashiach coming earlier, then that scenario will not be necessary, and the war of Gog and Magog will still incur, but it may come well after the Mashiach coming. So that helps us explain when we say, when we daven in Rosh Hashanah, that the kisei davi mehera l'socha sochi, to have it come quickly. It's davening that we don't need a Mashiach ben Yosef. It means that we can circumvent that state, that if we really want Mashiach to come and we're set on doing tshuva, that we bring Mashiach before the right time, the end goal time when it has to come, then we have the ability to not need Mashiach ben Yosef to be an arousal for tshuva. We can do tshuva on our own and save a tremendous amount of bloodshed and save a tremendous amount of challenge. Before I move to segue to that area about us doing tshuva before we need to do tshuva, and in that way we won't need the Mashiach ben Yosef, and in that way the B'nai Ephraim would have needed to go out, I just want to make mention in 32, the Gemara says that one who eats three meals on Shabbos, and that's why it's important even in the winter months to have shel shittos, bread, sit down, have a real suda, will be saved from three calamities: the trials and tribulations prior to Mashiach, the judgment of Gehenna, and the war of Gog and Magog. The Shabbat meals are the quintessence of binding the physical world to the spirituality of the world to come. One who creates this harmony between the worlds will not need these three calamities. The trials are necessary because of the rejection of the spiritual by the hedonistic material world, because of the conflict between the physical and the spiritual. The judgment of Gehenna is needed to atone for the conflicts that exist between body and soul, and the sins that ensue from that conflict. The war of Gog and Magog represents the opposition to the mission of Mashiach and the Messianic era by the evil forces of this materialistic world represented by Gog and Magog. And again, Gog and Magog, we know, is from the word Gog, which first says that we are in charge of our lives. It's not God. And one who eats the three meals of Shabbos and thus harmonizes the physical and the spiritual will avoid the conflict that is caused when the physical and spiritual come head to head, and will not need those three calamities to rectify the conflict. And that, I think, is the byproduct message definitely for our lives. That why is it that we have such a problem in bringing the Messianic era into our lives? Why is it that we struggle so much and Mashiach isn't here? Is because the more we are immersed in the physical world, the more we're immersed in our hedonistic pleasures, the more we create a barrier between us and spirituality. And the more we say we're really not interested in the spiritual world, we're very comfortable in our physical world, and we're very comfortable following after our physical pleasures. And we know, to the extent that we have these physical drives and needs, to that extent we have pushed aside the spiritual. And what Shabbos does, which is Me'in Olam Haba, which is a taste of the next world, is the ability to eat and to enjoy. At the same time, to eat and enjoy in a spiritual way. That we don't get lost in our challan. That the challan is a medium of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that having the third meal, the Shal Shudis, the third meal is dafka, when I'm not hungry. I'm not eating because I love to eat. I'm eating because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me. So I don't need to have a big meal. There's an Indian of having fish at Shal Shudis. It's a skula for parnasa. Like having eggs to remind us of the three people that died at that particular tkufa of that end of Shabbos, Yosef HaTzadik, David HaMelech, and Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's a time to really internalize our connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So, my friends, we have level number one, the 430 years, counting of Rashi, Chazal, that it's 400 years from the late the birth of Yitzhak Avinu, that it's saved the 430 years from when the Tzivos, Hashem, the angels, came down to Mitzrayim. That's, we didn't stay in Mitzrayim 400 years. Hashem shrunk it into a smaller amount of time. And when we go through something and it's so painful, and we say, well, God, why are you making it so painful? Know that the pain itself is an indication that it's moving much quicker, and that I don't have to have this as an extended period. It can end much sooner. Not always, right? We don't know, and that's the idea. We don't know the ways of Hashem. It is not for us to understand the ways of Hashem. Who are we to go after the king to know what Hashem wants? Humility is necessary. That was what was missing in Bnei Ephraim, who felt that they could go out with arms without Hashem's permission. On the second level, the 430 years was 400 years that Avraham Avinu was promised. 30 years was added because of the 30 years of difficulty to Yosef HaTzadik's life. Bnei Ephraim felt they weren't connected to those 30 years. They could go out earlier, deeper. The Bnei Ephraim felt that they were the Mashiach ben Yosef, and therefore they needed to set the way for the Klai Yisrael to come. The problem was, Hashem didn't command, and we have to do what Hashem commands. We can circumvent, perhaps, Mashiach ben Yosef coming, and that's through tshuva. And if we live a life that is the life of Kadosh Baruch Hu wants, and we do tshuva on our own without being forced to do tshuva, so we have tremendous amount of yeshuas, tremendous amount of salvations. The third level is an idea the Ramban brings in 33, that the 30 years, and it's a very, very long, complicated Ramban, but one of the ideas he brings, since this is in the asterisk, is because Klal Yisrael went down so far in Egypt, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu added these 30 years. So similar to what we just saw, Hashem added these 30 years to Klal Yisrael being there. Galutam nitarcha efo shoshim shana me'ever l'machin iksam me'ros, beyond what they had originally, it was now 430, even though Avraham Avinu was told 400, it turns into 430. I want to learn together a medrash in Otsar HaMidrashim and Rav Zaitchik on this. And this, my friends, in my mind, is something we really need to take to heart. And I think the last few years, it screams this out. The Holocaust definitely screams this out. COVID screams this out. Listen to this medrash. Listen to the Or Chadash from Zaitchik on this. And then we'll bring it home. V'chi ma'char shi'Yisrael chavivim, lama masram b'yad oyev. Source 35. If Klal Yisrael are so beloved, why did Hashem put us in Egypt? Amar b'chanin yalufi, shekol midor d'kosh baruch hu midah k'negi midah. Hashem works measure for measure. B'tchila kodem she'erdu l'mitzrayim hayu b'nei imahos, mevazim b'nei shvachos, v'lo nagu b'hem achva. The children of the main wives were making light, making fun of the children of the shvachos, of the maidservants, and there wasn't real brotherhood. V'ayah davar kashem o b'nei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was very, very troublesome to Hashem. V'ayta ruch HaKadosh Havacha v'omera kulach yafa ra'iti. As if the divine presence was screaming out, you're all beautiful. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ech ha'asel lahem shikablu b'nei HaShvachos. What am I going to do that they should all be accepted? Oridam l'mitzrayim v'yu kulam avadim. I'll bring them down to Egypt and let all them be slaved. U'b'sha'ash shenigalim. And that's why, when they are slaved, it will be the mitzvah of Pesach that they'll be involved in, and all of them will open the Haggadah together and say, Avadim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. Not, you're the B'nai Shvachos, you're the B'nai Kviros, no. Avadim hayinu, we're all the same. V'kol kach lama, lo diag ruoto v'shivchosha k'rshbrochu l'chol bayolam v'yedu l'asod shalom ben b'yosef. And this is to teach us the importance of making peace among our brethren. This medrash is a chiddush gemur. Hinezem of hilum itbonein lasig darchei Hashem. The great, amazing, awesome experience of shibud Mitzrayim lo ba elakadei lashvod et aruchot vadeos, to make us all the same, so that there is no difference between any one of us. Umanarala gopinzet shiilule makari nasuzo lo hayu tsarich amenu lizdakek bereshit hitpaktuto v'smichuto lo to kur mitzarefa yisrim shel shibu mitzrayim. You know what the upshot of this is? That had the brothers not treated the B'nai HaShvachos this way, we wouldn't have had to go down to Egypt. And that goes back to the Tosfos question. Well, what do you mean they went down to Egypt because they sold the brother? Weren't they supposed to go down to Egypt because of Bris Ben Absarim? No, my friend, it never says in Bris Ben Absarim, go back to page 1, it never says that they are going to be in Egypt. It just says they will be in a land. And he said to Avram, know that certain your offspring shall be aliens in a land not their own. They will serve them, they will oppress them 400 years. So part of that time, as we saw, was that Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu, the Shvatim, were strangers in Eretz Yisrael. Just like Hagar, Vatanah, Sarah was afflicted by Sarah Imenu, right? Sorry, Maynard, afflicting somebody, can imagine what that affliction is like. Like, wow, like, if you have to be afflicted, like, be afflicted by Sorry, Maynard. We could have been afflicted by people like Sorry, Maynard. It didn't have to be that we were afflicted in Egypt. It never says Egypt. That's what the Rambam is saying in the Yerid HaTeiman. Hashem left it very vague. And because of Mechiras Yosef, which was about all the way the brothers were treating each other, that's what brought us down to Mitzrayim. Had this not been the dynamics, had all the brothers gotten along well, this is Gvaldik. there would have been no necessity to go down to Egypt and to experience on our flesh what it means that we're all equal. We're all slaves, that we come out and say, Avadim Hayinu. And that was the purpose of going down into Egypt. Ki bal korcha shel adam shelo yaseh b'nedivus libo, double squiggly, in 36, mitoch hakarat erkei amusar, what a person doesn't do from their own understanding of what is right, ya'alantz mitzofola sotza mitoch sarvi yisrum chalila, then God's going to have to make you figure this out through challenges. And that is our, v'hainu shintein lano b'chira v'yechola. We have the choice. We have the choice to have the humility to say, let's work on ourselves, let's do tshuva, let's self-reflect, let's see if we're treating people correctly, let's see if we've created unity among the people, let's see if we've learned the lesson. We have that choice. Or we can lord it over and we can say this one is better than that one and point fingers and it's this group and it's that group and just cause divisiveness among the people. As we know, the end of 37, Yirmiyahu Navi says, had you just cried once, Al Naros Bavil Sham Yat Shavnu Gam Bachinu, if you had just cried once before you had to get to Naros Bavil, the whole Golos would have happened. Are we aware that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when He gives us Yisurim, when He gives us difficulties, and again, a lot of these difficulties could be avoided potentially if we were to learn this lesson. The Natus Yimach Shemam taught us the same lesson. It doesn't matter if you're Rosh Yeshiva, it doesn't matter if your, you know, grandmother was Jewish. You're Jewish. You're equal. And that understanding of that equality, of that brotherhood, of that connection with one another, that's what we have to learn. That's the message. The message has to be that feeling of unity. Had the brothers treated each other with that equality, so the Yisurim, the challenges would have been totally different. And the whole experience of Egypt would have been a totally different experience. But because we didn't learn this lesson, and not only did we learn this lesson, we continued to sin. An extra 30 years was added. Just very briefly, on this level, why was the Dafka B'nai Ephraim? So the Emes LeYaakov says something very fascinating. He says that if you take a look at during World War II, it was really the Germans who were the most under the impression that we are Germans, we are good Germans, and nothing can happen to us. The people in the other Poland and other outlying, other regions there weren't fooled. They knew that, you know, the rear of anti-Semitism can rear its head at any time. Ephraim is Ki Ephraim Elokim Be'eretz Anyi. Menashe means I forgot. But Ephraim was about building and budding. They really felt like this was their land, and how could the Egyptians do this to them? And therefore, they felt like there was a bigidah, there was a betrayal. And that's what was the impetus for them to leave, because it was hard for them to stay when they felt like this was their home. How could they be treated this way? And again, this is going back to this idea of the humility of knowing we don't know. And that whatever situation we're in, we have to recognize if Hashem put us here, we have to be here until Hashem tells us it's time to get out. Which leads us to our final idea in the minute and a half we have, that what was the whole idea of getting out? So if you take a look, Rav Kluger brings it down, B'nai B'chor Yisrael 39, the whole idea of the Bris Ben Bsarim isn't the focus that we're to be slaves for 400 years. The focus is the next pasuk. And the next pasuk tells us that we're then going to be redeemed. Or the future pasukim, as for you, you shall come to your ancestors in peace, and you'll be buried in old age, and the fourth generation will return here. No, the goal isn't that we were in Egypt for 400 years. The goal is that we leave Egypt to go into Eretz Yisrael. And he describes that when Eretz Yisrael is like, he says, Kevench Eretz Yisrael, Yibuchimat Haguf, Shal Yitzhak Avinu, Nishamas Yisrael. It's like Avinu's like the neshama, and the neshama has needs a body. The body is Eretz Yisrael. And this, my friends, is why Yitzchak Avinu couldn't leave. That's the idea of the Prispem Sarin. You're going to have a child, and it's going to be Eretz Yisrael. And the child and Eretz Yisrael are really linked together. And know this in general. V'im kein, k'shem sh'Yitzchak Avinu v'Eretz Yisrael echad heim, k'mo kein nishmak Yisrael b'chlaliyot. The Jewish people belongs in Eretz Yisrael. They are the guf, that is the physical body, where our neshama should be, which is the place of us. That's why you can't leave Eretz Yisrael unless for a Dvar Mitzvah. And that's why the Gra explains that Golos is about the Predas HaNeshama Min HaGuf. It's like death. The body and soul are separated. The real upshot of our Persha is that we understand that what led to the Golos, to the harshness of the Golos, is that Kla Yisrael weren't able to understand the proper mitos. They weren't able to understand what it means to get along brotherhood. And that's what led to the harshness. There had to be Golos, but to the harshness of that Golos, and what was the tikkun, as we saw, of helping each other out. As we are living at the cusp of the Schelta de Gula, the beginning of the Ikvus of Mashiach, rather, the beginning of the redemptive time, we have to be able to tap into that aspect of the Achdus, of treating each other properly, of uniting together, of being able to find that one group isn't different than the other group, as well as to have this yearning for Eretz Yisrael. Whether B'nai Ephraim were correct or not, they meant well. They had the deep desire for Eretz Yisrael. And the fascinating thing is, the Gemara in Sanhedrin in 34 tells us that what happens to these Meitim Shechia Yecheskel Alu L'Eretz Yisrael. Ultimately, they are brought to Eretz Yisrael because that was their dream. And my friends, that has to be our aspiration, and that has to be our dream. And this is our final idea, says the Eim HaBanim Smecha, which was written during the Holocaust, Rav Tachtel. It says in 41, Pasuk says, Achar Yashuvu B'nei So, Bikshu Et Hashem, then Klaisa will do tshuva, and they'll search out Hashem and David. Right, in the Beis HaMikdash. And he says, we've been searching out, and we've been davening, but nothing's happening. He said, there's a difference between Sheila and Bakasha. Achat Sha'alti Meis Hashem Osa Avakesh. Sheila is Tfila. Bakasha is action. Ubikshu Et Hashem Vet David Malkam. It's not enough just to daven for Eretz Yisrael, to daven for the Geula. We have to be proactive and act on it. And this is about understanding the centrality of Eretz Yisrael. It's our goof for our neshama. It's where we belong. And this is the message, really, of the Bris Ben Absarim. We had to go through Golos, and now we're in Golos. We have to now, as a nation, work toward unity, work toward understanding each other, and work to the primacy of Eretz Yisrael, encouraging people to come here, encouraging our children to move here, encouraging those who are going to buy a retirement apartment to buy it here, that we have to understand, Golos is Golos. But it's to choose to live in Golos is very, very intense. And that Bikshu has to be a proactive action to show I'm yearning for the redemption and I'm doing something proactive to be able to bring it closer. With Hashem's help, we will indeed be able to see the Mashiach ben David without the need of Mashiach ben Yosef, b'mehera b'yameinu.